Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard. This is going to be a fun episode because I've got filmmaker Alex Cannon on Zoom with me. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, man?
I am good. So if you are listening to this, understand that not only are we on Zoom, but Alex is in his car. He parked and he's chilling by the beach, which is wonderful. So if you don't like the audio quality, understand that this is a modern world where people use Zoom and you don't always have the best recording environment, but you sound pretty good to me.
Good. That's all that counts, man. Thank you.
And I do apologize, dear listener, if my voice is like three times louder than Alex's. I wish I could do something about it, but you know, Zoom does not let me adjust levels. So we got what we got. But I just talked to Alex. So if you're listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast, the episode before this one was all about Alex and his award-winning film, La Cita, which is Spanish for The Appointment. It's a wonderful documentary. In fact, it was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival that I program in 2021, and it took home the Audience Award for Best Short Film Documentary. So golf clap for that. Wonderful work, Alex. I know you got other awards elsewhere, so it's got a really nice festival run. And this pod, so if you want to learn all about Alex and that film, listen to the podcast before this. This podcast is just for pure fun. Alex is going to answer the Discover Indie Film. Man, what's with my mouth today? The Discover Indie Film four questions, which are, just name three favorite films, a film that's underrated, a film that's overrated, and a lesser known film that people should seek out. And I will just, I will be quiet, sir. You want to share three of your favorites?
Sure, sure. I'd say the 1984's The Killing Fields, 1997 Terrence Malick's The Thin Red Line, and my third film, that's a tough one, I would say I would say there's so many to choose from, but I'll go with Darren Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream.
That's your top Aronofsky, huh?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that's my number one Aronofsky movie. Yeah.
It's sometimes true. I love your list. I gotta throw in an extra mention for The Killing Fields, amazing film directed by the amazing Roland Joffe. I just got to share that it's written by one of my favorite writers of all time, a guy named Bruce Robinson. After that, did a little film called With Nolan I that I thought was amazing.
Yep, 1987. And
another
yep.
amazing film called How to Get Ahead in Advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jennifer Eight and some other stuff, but, you know, he's like, he's just this amazing British writer. I don't know how these freaking British guys are just so good at writing films, but Killing Fields is an amazing film from an amazing team. So I just want to back that up. And of course, Thin Red Line, Terrence Malick. I love how divisive he is. Some people just totally groove on him. And some people are like, I don't get it. It's boring. It's a fun balance.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
For sure. And your last one was Requiem for a Dream, which is just talk about cinema. My God. Mm.
Cinema verite.
He pulls out all the stops on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's visceral. Visceral filmmaking. It's one of a kind filmmaking. You're experiencing the character's downward spiral type filmmaking. Not for everybody.
I know, and he used all the goodwill and weight that he got from his first success, Pi.
Brilliant.
And to go from a film like Pi and say, you can tell, right? It was one of those moments where it's like, okay, Pi got some heat. What am I going to do next? This is my one chance to do something. Because if the second one doesn't work right, the career is over. And he just jumped on Requiem for a Dream, which was, talk about a challenge to adapt that book.
Wow. Tell four parallel stories. Did you know, I read an article that the brilliant Clint Mansell, who did the soundtrack for Requiem for a Dream, used samples of sound effects from Bruce Lee Kung Fu movies. And I think it was Mozart. And he turned them in reverse, remixed them. So the is actually the punching sounds. I played backwards and spread out. It's brilliant what he did.
Amazing. Just
brilliant
amazing.
Artist. Yeah.
For sure. Actually, wait, what's the composer's name?
Clint Mansell. Who did the brilliant Fountain, the other Aronofsky movie?
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. Was he also in a punk band?
Papa Lead Itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? Right. I love these Another one of my favorite composers, I think, is, oh my God, I might blow this. Cliff Martinez. He was like the drummer in a punk band.
He was.
The Dickies, yeah. Or something. And then he went on to like make these amazing ethereal soundtracks for Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah. And then for Nicholas Refn, another divisive, in my opinion, brilliant, one of a kind filmmaker. Yeah. He scores all his work.
Yeah.
Only God Forgives, Drive.
And these dudes were in punk bands that seemed like totally anti-music. And
I know.
These beautiful scores.
Yeah. Majestic scores. Isn't that ironic? What artists? My goodness.
Gosho, you can't judge a musician by what they're doing on stage. Heck.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I agree.
As a musician, for those who don't know, who didn't listen to the previous podcast, Alex is a pianist, keyboard player, pianist, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
So yeah. You get it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can move on to question number two, which is a film that is underrated.
I would say I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give two answers because I need to draw attention to these movies. One is Mishima, Life in Four Chapters, Paul Schrader movie, 1985. Are you familiar with it, Jeff?
I do not know that one.
Ooh, it's a brilliant movie. That's not a movie I grew up with. Just like I grew up with Koi Niskatsi, which is another brilliant movie. Everyone who's listening needs to see Koi Niskatsi. Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters, tells the life of the controversial but brilliant Japanese author Yukio Mishima, and it intersperses his biography with three things are going on in parallel. The last day of his life, his childhood, and some of his stories where the characters run parallel to who he is as a person. Crazy movie. Amazing movie. Brilliant. Fantastic. Soundtrack by Philip Glass. Philip, he did that after Koi Niskatsi. He did the music for Mishima after Koi Niskatsi. So that's a brilliant one. There's also a film not many people know about, 2001. It's a Brazilian film called Behind the Sun by Walter Salles, Salles, Behind the Sun. It's one of the few movies, poetry in motion. You're watching visual poetry and a haunting musical soundtrack by Antonio Pinto, majestic photography, so much acting, so much done with so little words. It's one of a kind movie. I wish it had more. I wish Criterion would pick it up and run it through a 4K remaster and put it on its channel because it deserves that. It's a majestic, beautiful piece of work.
You know, it sounds fantastic. I haven't seen that one either. So two good picks. And I'll add, you know what? I'm going to say something just to piss off a bunch of people, which is Paul Schrader is amazing. And I think a lot of people know him as, you know, a frequent collaborator of Martin Scorsese, right? He like wrote the majority of Scorsese's best stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think Paul Schrader is the better filmmaker. I'll just come out and say it. I think people should do deep dives on Paul Schrader, man, because he's just an original, and everything he does is a little edgier and a little more challenging.
Well, I think Mishima, I think Mishima is his best work. I think, in my opinion, it's better. I like it more than First Reformed. I like it more than Affliction. I think to date, he hasn't beat Mishima. But I love Blue Collar, his first movie with Richard Pryor and Harvey Keitel. But I might still give the slight edge to Mishima because of its artistry.
For sure. All right. I'm adding it to my list.
Yeah, right, well, check it out.
Question number three is kind of fun. It's a film that's overrated.
The Fableman.
Because you're a naturally kind person, I'll add that overrated, you're not saying it's a bad film. You're just saying it can be overrated. In fact, you could have said, you know, Paul Schrader's, you know, whatever, what did he do, Mosquito Coast or whatever? Like, you could name like one of his bigger films and say that's overrated because all his other work is so great. So overrated is not necessarily an insult.
I would say the first thing that comes to mind is the Fablemans, Spielberg's The Fablemans. And I'll go on a limb, and I didn't like it at all either. I thought it was overrated and it was not good.
and now it's up for Best Picture, I believe.
Yeah, and that's up for Best Picture. Yeah, I think the two great movies I saw this year were in only two great movies. Number two is Banshees of Inisherin, and number one would be The Whale. That's what I would put.
Fair enough. I haven't seen. You know, I watch so many films for the festivals. I don't see that many of the ones that are out there. But truth is, when you say Fablemans, I'm not going to watch that.
No, it's so bad.
I'm not a Spielberg guy. I understand By the way, when I say I'm not a Spielberg guy, I am well aware I am in the minority. The vast majority of the people on this planet love Spielberg's films. Yeah. And I think his best thing is Munich. And I don't, you know, whatever.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I think Munich was definitely his most challenging movie. And I think, you know, it was a good script. He made you think. It wasn't clear, good versus evil. I just think it's a great movie.
He didn't hit us over the head with a score that everyone loves that I don't care for.
Correct.
I don't need those scores saying, this is what you must feel. I'm like,
this is what you must feel. I know.
As soon as you notice the score has stepped outside its realm, I think.
So take, for example, the music in Requiem for a Dream or Koinoskatsi. That music doesn't tell you what to feel. That music complements the experience. Yeah.
Totally. All right. Well, Fablemans, fair enough. I'm sure you're in good company with that. I bet a lot of people on the podcast in the next couple months are going to name Fablemans because, you know, how can you not? So anyway, I mean, it's a Spielberg film that's getting tons of award nominations and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, if you're going to throw stones at somebody, you might as well throw it at the most successful guy who's ever done it. Because you're just saying overrated. You're not saying it's a bad film, although you did. So anyway,
I did.
Last question. Yeah. Last question is a lesser known film for people to seek out.
Well, I would say for those who haven't seen, that's a great question. I would say 1952. Kenji Mizuguchi's movie called Ugetsu, Ugetsu. Brilliant Japanese movie. I go back and, I mean, I love Kurosawa films. Mizuguchi is his movie. He went where Kurosawa didn't go. His exploration of, you know, the plight of women, the plight of sex workers, Japanese culture, and, you know, social hypocrisy. He really went there. And Ugetsu is a brilliant, beautiful film.
Wow. Okay. Hard to imagine a film made in 1953 that tackles subjects like sex work.
Yeah. Ugetsu doesn't, but strangely, Mizuguchi made movies prior to 1952, where he did a movie called Streets of Shame, which I think was in the late 40s. And it was like a Cassavetes or early Martin Scorsese type movie, gritty movie that followed in a conversational way, like a Robert Altman type style, Woody Allen style, minus the kitsch, minus the cute kitsch of these struggling post-war displaced, culturally displaced and, you know, marginalized female sex workers. It was brilliant. He was a very compassionate filmmaker.
Excellent. Well, and I'm just going to add for you, for lesser known for people, we've talked about it a couple of times, but if you're listening to this and you've never seen Koinoskatsi, which of course is spelled K-O-Y-A-A-N, at that point it should auto, I think it's I-S-Q-A-T-S-I, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'm spelling it right. But, you know, everyone should watch Koinoskatsi at least once a time in their life, if not, on an annual basis.
And put the phone away. Leave the phone in the other room, man, when you watch.
Put the phone away. And I believe the DP of that film made something that I loved as a follow-up called
Baraka.
Kronos.
I never saw Kronos, but I saw Baraka.
Ron Baraka. Frick. You know, yeah. I saw Kronos when it was only at like those museums that had an IMAX. Remember when IMAX was only at a couple museums in the country? Like it was in LA. Actually, San Diego had an amazing theater and part of the museums down there in Balboa Park.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
But Kronos was, I think it's like a 30, 35, maybe 40 minute
short one, right? Yeah.
Film that's the history of humanity in 30 minutes without words. Ah, so anyway, wonderful companion to Koinoskatsi.
I should see it then. Thanks, Jeff. I'll check it out.
I know. I got to figure out a way to download it or something because I don't even know where it can be seen. And I live with people who haven't seen it. I've got to bore the heck out of my 15-year-old and make her sit through these films and see what happens. I'll be I'll be like, okay, I'm going to handcuff you, take away your phone, and make you watch Koyaanisqatsi and see what happens.
It's an experience to be lived watching that movie, Koyaanisqatsi. Yeah.
It really is. It must have meant a lot to you as a Chicagoan because, right, there's footage of those projects being destroyed in Chicago.
Those are the ones in St. Louis, Pruitt Igoe.
Oh, but, St. Louis. For some reason, I thought it was in Chicago.
No, no. But there were so many projects in Chicago that looked like it. I mean, growing up, I would drive through the south side of Chicago, and they looked just like those from Prudy. I mean, man, that I'm getting into a hypnotic trance right now just thinking of that whole sequence. Is, I don't know, between that and the opening scene and the end scene, that's probably my favorite in the movie, with the music and the buildings falling, and it's good.
Excellent. All right, well, I was inaccurate in my my Koyaanisqatsi trivia, but I'll own it. I'm not always right. And thank you so much, Alex Cannon. For those who don't know, he was on this podcast, if you missed in the beginning, because he made an award-winning short documentary called La Cita, which is the appointment in Spanish. It's a breathtakingly great and heartbreaking film about the violence that a transgender woman in Tijuana deals with, and what life is like trapped between so many worlds in a society that is often abusive at a societal level, which it's hard for people to wrap their minds around the fact that there are people who feel like the very society they live in is against them.
Yeah.
And anyway, I will hop off that and thank you again.
Thanks, Jeff.
As far as checking out you and your work, people should go to YouTube and search for Winston Sizemore. Is that the best way to check it out?
Winston Sizemore Productions. And then IMDb, you could just look me up, Alex Cannon, K-A-N-N-A-N. That's my last name. That's my law firm name as well, Cannon Law Firm. But you can look me up on IMDb. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't make it clear that Cannon is not spelled like the old-fashioned wall buster from the Middle Ages awards.
Right.
It's not a pirate ship, Cannon. It's K-A-N-N-A-N.
K-A-N-N-A-N. You got it. Yeah.
All right. All right, people. You know how to find Alex and his work. And now I will wrap us up with my closing spiel, which is thank you for listening to the Discover Indie Film Podcast. Be nice and like and subscribe to it. Doesn't hurt. Heck, you could even write a nice review if you want. If you want to learn more about this podcast, you can do so at discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And by the way, this podcast led to a TV series on Amazon Prime Video. I learned talking to filmmakers on this podcast that all the features were on streaming services. The shorts tend not to be. So we put it together with a bunch of people who had shorts and had done this podcast. And we did season one. Shoot, I should know this, but I think season one might have been 2018, I think. We're already on season 7, just came out. And I believe Alex's film, La Cita, might just be in season 9. Believe it or not, it won't be in season 8. 7 just came out. 8 is all dance films because just look at me. I love to dance. Or listen to me. I live for dance. I do live for dance. I am the most awkward person who's ever tried to move their feet for in a beautiful way. But I just find when human beings know how to dance, I just find it so beautiful. So I was invited to be a guest curator at a UK-based dance film festival. And I said to the head programmer, I'm like, do you want to do a season of Discover Indie Film that's all dance and you'll pick the films? Thank goodness she said yes. So I don't even have to worry about season 8. Someone else is handling season 8. So that's why I'm saying La Cita will probably be in season 9. And right, you find it just by searching for Discover Indie Film on any Prime Video app. And Sherman Oaks Film Festival, that's where I first saw La Cita. You can learn about that festival that we hold every November by going to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Sister Festival every June, Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And the last thing that I'm going to throw in is I love indie film and getting it out there for people. And we had an idea. I had an idea. So now there, if you go onto your smart TV, whether it's Apple TV, Roku TV, Android TV, Amazon Fire TV, you search for... Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said TV Hi. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV Hi, as in watchtvhi.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to @watchtvhi. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast. And it is all excellent content, excellent films, shorts and features that are particularly good to watch and even possibly better to watch when you're high. That's why it's called Hi TV, H-I. But I swear to God, you don't have to use drugs to enjoy film. Alex Cannon, thank you so much.
I appreciate you, Jeff. Thanks, man.
I appreciate you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.